the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half, a little bit past the bottom of the hour, and went a little longer with Darren than I expected, but we got a lot in. And Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid joins us. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Steve. No, I enjoyed the conversation.
I'm glad
you and Darren.
I didn't know, a lot of times, you got something to do at 10:30, 10:40 and commitments. So I
appreciate the heads up text.
We'll talk about some Derby horses and maybe some names that have come in that we hadn't yet. And then next week, of course, you will undoubtedly pull a plum out like little Jack Horner. But I wanted to get some sales notes in to yesterday's day one. And granted, there's three more days of horse sale to go on. But that was a pretty good day yesterday. And there were some surprising names on the leaderboard, I thought.
There were. First off, you had Gunrunner had the 850,000 horse. Yeah, he'd had a 1.7 million horse earlier at the other sale, phase of Tipton. So, his horses are really selling really well. The one for 1.7 million, that's going to Baffert, same ownership as Medina Spirit. This 850,000 one from Michael Lund Peterson is also going to Baffert. Of course, he owns Camille and Bob Trainton. So what you are seeing is Gunrunner is a first crop stallion, and first 2 year olds this year. And what we noticed through this whole yesterday's selling is that these first crop stallions continue to sell off the charts, which, we've been talking about this for a decade, but, here it is again. You pointed out Midnight Storm, who had a $550,000 horse purchased by Windstar. That's another huge hit. He's the son of Pioneer of the Nile. He was a G1 winner on turf, G2 winner on dirt, G1 placed on dirt. He only stands for $7,500. And as you noted, Steve, to me in a text, sold unusually well, not only that 550,000 lot, but one for $310,000, another for $150,000 as well. So punching above his weight
in a big way. And he did have three RNAs, but they were, they were for modest amounts of money. I see that John Fort bought one of them, a filly. In fact, that was the filly that went in 9-4. And you mentioned Maverick Racing, which is Windstar. News today, too, by the way, that Windstar is going to get involved in MicroShare programs. And
is that right?
Yeah, just came in the last half hour. Just saw the alert. And who else? Maxis Stable bought one. Shirley Camilleri bought a less expensive one. But Midnight Storm, that caught my eye. Lord Nelson, who had that issue that kept him, had the back issue that delayed the start of his career, but there's always been an anticipation that that he's going to be well received. Columbine bought a $310,000 colt by Lord Nelson off of Nick Demerick, and Legacy Racing for $140,000 that Pickview offered. That was a filly, and that caught my eye. American Freedom, that I think I brought up to you after the March sale, Sid, American Freedom with a couple of six-figure, well, one six-figure, but then some nice 50 and 70, et cetera, but a $285,000 Colt that went in 10 flat that Mike Ryan bought, and that's a feather in the cap of an aspiring stallion.
It is, man. American Freedom also had a six-figure horse at a previous sale, too. He's also had his first starter win. And like Lord Nelson, he's one of Pulpit's last sons. So Pulpit, of course, the sire of Tappet at AP Indy Line. And so there's a lot of anticipation for both Lord Nelson and American Freedom. American Freedom, particularly standout physical, I mean, in my opinion, I mean, in the sense that you stand, you watch him and he just, yeah, it just takes your eye. I mean, not that he's extraordinarily pretty or anything, but just the physicality of it. He's got a broad back. I mean, you can set a dining table on it, you know, and yeah, he's, looks like he built for speed, but of course, you know, he was, I might be wrong about this, but he was the horse that Baffert brought into the Travers that took the money, and it was Arrogate that won.
That's right.
American Freedom ran second, I think. But yeah, he is definitely excuse me.
Bless you.
Stallion prospect people are looking into.
There were a couple of isolated, complete out, not outliers, but just a couple of classic Florida, whenever you get to the two-year-old in training sale season, and particularly with OBS, you'll get, the Adios Charlie type that just sort of bubbles to the surface. How about a Noble Bird that Ocala Stud offered West Bloodstock bought for Bob and Luana Lowe, $400,000, and Valiant Minister had a filly that Coastal Equine, Jesse Hoppel, offered that Solis Litt bought for a client, and that was $360,000. I mean, there's a couple of names that wasn't on anybody's bingo card.
Yeah, Noble Bird stands at Ocala Stud, and this particular colt apparently was foaled there and raised there. He was an accomplished racehorse by, Birdstone, so he doesn't have, not the most commercial pedigree. Of course, pedigrees kind of play a backseat at these two-year-old races because it's that stopwatch that really determines a lot. The Valiant Minister is a big hit because this colt, Gray Candy Ride, was I believe a $680,000 two-year-old himself that Bob Baffert trained for Bayoma Corp. He only made one start, not at two, not at three, but at four, I believe. Won that big, 108 change, but that was it for him. Bayoma decided to stand this horse, just like they've stood Chitu. They sent him to John Malone's Bridalwood Farm. George Isaacs is the manager there. George Isaacs, by the way, used to manage Rivalwood, during the era of Arthur Appleton, too. So he's always been there. He's always done an excellent job. Anyway, they stand the stallion, Valiant Minister, who's won his lone start. Big win, obviously. Similar, he's the son of Candy Ride. But profile-wise, he's got that same type of profile of McLean's Music, that distorted humor stallion in John Secura's place, who only made one start as well. And, got cloud computing in his first crop week this winter, and his had others like Jackie's Warrior, et cetera. So it's a, you know, well-intended horse and bought by Solis Lit. They know what they're doing. So he worked in 20 and 4. And by the way, she was also bred by the Bayoma Corp.
You mentioned, it's funny, you mentioned McLean's Music. I was going to bring up the colt that Joe Applebaum offered that went for 310, Ed and Susie Orr. And this mm-hmm. one breezed a quarter, 20 and 3. And I thought that that a nice sell through. Violence, speaking, you know, we'll mention some Hill and Dale action. Violence had a good first day as well. $190,000 filly to Martin Racing that Grassroots offered. And Eddie Woods had one that X-Line Border, who, of course, is awaiting decision from them regarding Dream Shake in the Derby. Mm-hmm. But they bought a filly by Violence from Eddie Woods for $300,000. So a good first day for Violence. As well.
Yeah. Did you mention that American Freedom also had? Yeah, you did. That's right. Who was he? Oh, Klimt. I was going to say Klimt. Another first crop size.
Yep.
At Darby Dan by Quality Road. You know, he sold well. He had that filly for $250.
Randy Bradshaw.
And Classic Empire, another first crop sire. Had one for $250, but you know what you find when you look through this stuff, Steve, is that a lot of these high priced horses, no surprise, but it's just mind boggling. So many of them end up with Bob Baffert, so it's like one guy, one team, getting the cream of the crop of the draft. Baseball draft, you know, you get in the top round draft picks. That's a lot of ammunition before you start. You know, that's a lot of firepower for a barn in California to have one barn like that.
No doubt. And when it came to, I mentioned some of the consigners, I do want to note some names that aren't as familiar necessarily that had good opening day. That included Harris Training Center, and they had a 275 Liam's Map and a Heartspun Colt. That Josh Stevens bought for $310,000. Carl Keegan had a very good day. Lucan Bloodstock, $125,000 private sale for LNN. That's a mastery colt that if it's LNN, it's going to go to it's Lee Levinson will go to Steve Asmussen, I would imagine. Herring Swell, the Motions, they mm-hmm. bought an Arrogate colt for $150,000. From Keegan. How about Lauren Carlisle? $250 for a Classic Empire colt and a Dark Angel filly to Narvik for $240,000. And then also Jack Gary Kern Thoroughbreds USA, $190,000 for a Union Rags colt. So a big, big day one for Carl Keegan.
Yeah, and I also want to throw in that the session topper at $850.
Yeah,
the Gun Runner. You know, usually what happens in these two-year-old sales is you got the pinhookers will buy the yearling and less time and money turn into a two-year-old and sell, and usually we see major prices, you know, from yearling to two-year-old. An unusual step was the session topper Gun Runner, Eisenman Equine. They actually bred that colt.
Right. I saw that. That's right.
Yeah.
Barry Eisenman.
So the breeder is also a very good two-year-old man, Eisenman, Barry Eisenman. And they kept this thing and sold it at $850. That's a massive, you know, return with no sale in between.
Well, day two, and they're underway. Second day, and I heard from Darren Rogers this morning too that Gary Young will he's going to pull out Thursday night after the third day of the sale, and we'll see Gary here on Friday. So we'll probably get some sale thoughts from Gary when he arrives in Louisville. Keep watching, and we'll keep giving you the reports. Probably get a visit in with some of the on-site reporters later in the week for days 2, 3, and 4 as well. Sid, let me turn our attention toward Derby doings and some of the horses maybe that we haven't discussed as much. Typically the ones, you know, that are kind of down that were kind of nibbling, and we are waiting for a decision from Peter Urton. Dream Shake now seems to be the last of the uncertain participants, and Baffert coming back onto the list with Hozier, who would be next in if Dream Shake were to exit the field, and that would, you know, that situation has got to be a little irksome for Kenny McPeak, who I think was, you know, feeling pretty good and poised about King Fury getting into the field. He really was anxious to get King Fury in. But anyway, we got some horses down at the bottom that, are also rans in any number of the preps, including horses like Sainthood and Hidden Stash, Obisos, Get Her Number. They're all short of starts. Pick up on somebody, Sid, maybe that, that
sure
caught your eye.
Well, let's take a look at Get Her Number just to start off things. Now, this, the way the top 20 is right now, there's one stallion really that's dominating with the number of horses out of that 20, and that's Into Mischief, who has two horses. Into Mischief is known as a speed horse. Of course, he sired last year's Derby winner Authentic. He's got three in this year. Two of those highly motivated for Chad Brown and the Soup and Sandwich from Mark Cassie probably are going to be horses on the lead. And then you've got Mandaloon, who looks Brad Cox Into Mischief, who looks like, you know, a horse that would come off the page. So he's got three in there. But there's Dialed In at Darby Dan has two. Get Her Number, who you referenced, along with Super Stock, highly regarded. We saw him win the Arkansas Derby, right? Get Her Number, his grade one winner last year, won the American Pharoah. He was bred by Phil Robertson, a small breeder, Texan, who's also got a farm in Versailles, as well as Texas. He kind of shuttles back and forth. He actually, just this year, became a client of our company, and so I've talked to him quite frequently. And Phil, as it turns out, last year, he sold Get Her Number at the OBS April sale. Now, the April sale was last year. The same sale had been pushed down to June because of COVID. But he sold Get Her Number because of COVID and the financial uncertainty of the industry. He didn't want to sell, but he figured for some financial stability, he would sell. And he sold his colt for $45,000, I think, last year. He sold the dam earlier for something like $1,500 because she had a hard time getting in foal and was not able to really fit his program. But anyway, this colt won that grade one for Peter Miller, the American Pharoah, right? So last year he did well. He beat some good horses in his maiden. I think he beat Hot Rod Charlie. So he's come back twice this year, improved each time. 2-year-old grade one winner, improving horse, He's, you know, he's a horse people should take a look at because he's got the sire who's really hot right now. He's got a grade one win on himself, and he appears to be coming back into form, form that puts him right into, you know, into the thick of things, I think. And, you know, we'll throw him in there as one to watch.
Get her number, and oh, you know, we got to talk about Obesos, and because I think a lot of people have taken you know, a real interest because he really, in a lot of ways, I mean, there's a number of horses that are going to come from off the pace in here, and that are, you know, real deep closers, including some, you know, horses that are going to be fancied. I mean, Dynamic One, for instance,
right.
But Obesos has that feel of, you know, the right superfecta, trifecta key. You know, a horse that gets up at you know, at big odds to light up your tri or your super.
I think that just you're absolutely right about this. And if you look at his development, he fits that pattern, doesn't he? Just he's been improving. This kid, Marcelino Pedroza, who's riding him, I really like that rider. And I think the first time he rode him, Brian Hernandez had been riding him, dropping him from off the pace and making the one run. But I think the first time this kid rode him two starts back, he had him in earlier than he should have, and the horse flattened out. I think he finished fourth or something. But last out in the Louisiana Derby, he dropped him out and made the one run. And, you know, he was head beaten for second and galloped out in front of everybody. He's a stout horse who, you know, makes that one run. And he really does have that type of profile, like a golden soul to Dallas Stewart, you know. Could pick up the pieces very easily. And how you know, this horse is by Orb out of a mare by Soto. Okay, now, Soto was the son of De Haer that got sold to Saudi Arabia, had fertility issues, and just disappeared off the scene. He was a great De Haer horse, as I recall him. And so, you know, how ironic would it be that Claiborne had spent so much time trying to make Orb a stallion, and now he's been sent off to Uruguay, and Soto, the broodmare sire, was sent to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, if this horse went to Derby, you know, it just makes all the sense in the world. Given the topsy-turvy times we're living in. But, you know, he certainly could do something like that. That's what makes this thing interesting.
Well, exactly. And you know, you could see it. It was sort of a you know, it's like a slow-moving, I think I called it, you know, a slow-moving train wreck. I mean, that if he has a big performance in here, and you know, it's an interesting pedigree in general. There's all kinds of strange things in here. You go down the female family, Sid, and in addition to the Soto mare, there's a Baron O'Dublin, then there's a Roberto mare, and then there's a Seabird mare is the fourth mare, fourth dam.
The fourth dam, is that the family that goes to Pradella?
Yes. Pradella? Yes, yes.
Okay, well, that's the John Schiff family. And, you know, when you go back, it's a real nice family. You got Roberto and Seabird stacked up next to each other. You know, an Epsom Darby winner and one of the great ARC winners with a great family of Perdella. Then it falls into disrepair. I guess you mentioned Baron O'Dublin. And then we get to Soto, and then we get to Orb. So he's the antithesis of the Into Mischief. Into Mischief is the most expensive stallion in the country, the most popular horse. He's got three in the race, and everybody wants Into Mischief. And then you've got, like I mentioned earlier, Orb exported out of a mare by Soto exported.
Obisos, and he's going to work tomorrow. So something to look forward to for everybody on the video show tomorrow. And then, of course, Sid, the Friday, Saturday activity will really be a buzz. And we'll start to look at Oaks Phillies, too, for next week. The Oaks, going to be a lot of Oaks runners working on Friday. Then the boys will work on Saturday, is the way things are shaping up. So plenty to do. I do want to ask you. I do want to ask you about another unusual circumstance, not Derby related. And
yeah.
Monday, Sid, when I started to do the weekend recap, it became obvious that we were having we had a weekend where some new stars essentially, flex their muscles. That included Latruska, who had already won three grade threes. There was also things like Tis a Magician coming back and there was Royal Ship. But there was a number of interesting pedigrees that kind of came to the fore. And, here was a super saver when it came to Latruska. And he's gone, and Super Saver. Who else? There was somebody else too that caught my eye. What was it that there was an unusual? There was a couple of funny.
Royal Ship was a Southern Hemisphere bred midshipman, right?
Yes.
That's Brazilian.
Right. The Brazilian.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And you had the North American stake win from Bubbles on Ice, a Star Spangled Banner, and I'm sure
European bred there,
right? And yeah. There was one stake that I haven't even mentioned the small stake, the $75,000 stake at Charlestown, but Jerseytown got a stake winner. Over the weekend, too.
Brigantine Island got a stakes winner. Jerseytown got a stakes winner. Brigantine Island, exactly. And in fact, we just put an ad out. I think it's in the TDN today with highlighting that stakes winner. So what you just did a recap of is something that shows kind of parity in the business, right? Exported stallion super saver got Latruska, who was based in Mexico originally, bred here, but bred by the Mexican owner, German Loria. And then you've got a Southern Hemisphere Brazilian bred midshipman comes up here and wins. Gary Mandela had tipped me off about this horse months before he came over. He asked me if I knew much about him. I really hadn't. So you've got, midshipman is a solid stallion, a Darley, but it takes a Brazilian bred of his to come up here to get, add to his graded stakes tally up here. You've got Jerseytown, who stands in California for 3,000. You've got a Star Spangled Banner, who was a horse that had fertility issues. Comes up with this European bread. So, there's a lot of parity taking place across the industry as well. So even, with all these Into Mischiefs and the Curlins and a lot of these expensive horses in the Derby, the game still highlights some of the less expensive components of it. And, if you had all the money in the world, doesn't mean you're going to win all the races. And that's what makes us still appealing to people. I want to throw this in real quickly. Last year, when I was with you, you and I were talking about super stock, and we noticed that the breeders were Pedro Gonzalez and PJ Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And I said, I really don't know much about him. You hadn't either. We hadn't read anything about him. I finally spoke to him the other day. He's a Cuban-American who's been breeding horses in this country for 25 years. He came here when he was 10. He goes by Pete now because when he immigrated here, the first thing his grandmother said was, Pedro, you will now go as Peter. And so, he's known as Pete Gonzalez, but he's based in Miami. He's a retired guy. He only has about five or six, I think seven mares. And, he told me he's the first Cuban-American to breed the winner of the Arkansas Derby. I said, how do you know? He said, he researched it. And so I said, has anybody talked to you about winning this, being the breeder of this horse? He said, not a single person has called him or talked to him about it until he and I spoke. And I said, you have a chance to be the breeder of the Kentucky Derby and nobody knows who you are.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. I love it. We should, you mentioned money and expensive purchases too. Should bring up Cezanne's performance from the weekend as well, because that was that may be a sign that he's going to fulfill some of those expectations that Coolmore had for him with a big figure performance. And granted, things set up for him absolutely beautifully, but still, he still ran a bang up race, and is still lightly raced. Tiz Magician was sort of the opposite side of that, winning the mile and a half race. But here's 2 4-year-olds, Sid, that people probably have, kind of forgotten about to some extent, that both had expectations as 3-year-olds, and Baffert and Mandela, getting some results here fairly early in the 4-year-old season.
Yeah, and you're right. You had everything set up for him as well as field size. Those races in California really are short fields, aren't they?
Right, they're struggling a little bit right now. It's tough.
But he was a $3.65 million purchase. I believe that's correct. And he's got the potential to become a major stallion prospect for Coolmore should he win a grade one and, continue onward. So there's the top end of the game while we highlight some of the bottom parts as well.
Well, next week, Sid, we're gonna dig in, and the rubber meets the road. The draw will be Tuesday, and you'll have just about 24 hours to come up with some final thoughts when we talk next week.
Yeah, I really think it's prime this year for one of these OB shows or something like that to win.
Look at you. Yeah. All right. All right, that'll set everybody up for a surprise. Good.
Yeah, especially with the anticipated pay scenario, and Todd Pletcher's got that closer for Calumet Urbanic. It's going to be really interesting because you're going to have horses running hard early, middle, and late.
And that was in fact, I started my conversation when we started talking about the horses with Darren Rogers. I mean, the fact that Caddo River decided to throw in really helps everybody. I don't want to be dismissive of his chances, of course, but it does feel like it ensures. I mean, if there was any potential, I mean, the Derby, even without the sprinters that we used to have, The Derby pace, even if it looks like it's going to be fairly ordinary, mundane on paper, it's always a little faster than that just because there's horses vying for position and you get, you know, horses' blood gets up, they get bounced around a little bit, and the next thing you know, they're headlong into the first turn. So we're going to have an honest pace, and the field should really spread out nicely, I think, Sid, when you look at this. There's really three, you know, trimesters of runners. You know, there's six or seven that want to be in the vanguard. There's six or seven that are mid-pack, you know, string-alongs. And then there's six or seven that want to come from off the pace. So everybody is going to get their run in, I think.
I think so, too. I really I think that scenario is pretty valid. It's just, you know, I think you're going to get a bunch of horses fanned out in that straight, too. And, yeah, it should be, again, you know, hopefully it's a good track and all that. But I think it's going to really, it's about one of the most, you know, Darren Rogers talked about 2008 and Big Brown against the field. I don't know about that, really. I think it's way more wide open, and I think it's going to be like a country house type of horse.
Well, you're going to have your opportunity. There's you know at least eight that are going to be north of 25-1 at the very least. So almost half the field, I think, is going to be, you know, big balloons, boxcars.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to let you work your magic.
All right. Yeah. we'll take care of that, bro. We'll get some big numbers in next week.
Well, it's been a productive. The Sid Fernando inclusions have been consistently productive over the last decade. Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch on your Twitter, and of course Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And you know, we're getting, you know, April 20th, you know, we're the last 6-8 weeks of breeding season. And you know, those of you that were putting off decisions or you know, saw something in the babies that have dropped in recent weeks and you're thinking about something different, still time to work with Sid and Roger, and Sid will also help you find your way maybe to a late season deal.
Yeah, there are a lot of those deals now, you know, even people are advertising that. It's always that late season discount. And again, once again, appreciate your the props there and convention.
Not at all. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, everybody, Sid Fernando. We're going to stay here, and we're going to talk to Bill Downs and get that Indiana handicapping in next. And got about 40 minutes. Perfect. So we got about 20 plus or so with Bill, and then we'll visit with Seth Merrill as well. Catch up with Seth. Let me reach for my PPs. I haven't posted it at the website yet, but there's virtually no significant scratches out of the pick five carryover sequence today at Indiana. It's funny, actually, there is a horse that scratched that I'm actually glad that they came out. In the eighth race, the eight horse. Is that the right race? No, the ninth race. There was a 15-1 shot that Tony Granitz had named Tapirinha. And she was, to me, you know, this is the anchor leg of the pick five today. There's already, to me, six horses that can win this race. And so the fact that that she comes out doesn't bother me. It's still a nine-horse race. And I think Bill Downs is with us. Bill, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm terrific. And it didn't take long for the fur to fly in Shelbyville. That was quite a day yesterday.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It seemed like as the day got longer, as we proceeded through the card, it looked like the wind at some point really kicked in. And just absolutely annihilated some of the speed horses, and it led to some chaotic results. And I was talking to Eric Hallstrom, our GM. I said, "This thing's carrying over after the third leg." I'm like, "I said, there's just no way, even if it comes in chalk, because there were big enough fields." I said, "It's going to carry." And indeed, going into the last leg, everything was 4 or 5 or 3 or 5, and so we got our first carryover of the year in the mid-40s. What is it, 44,093. So, and I think it's a very playable sequence for the recreational moderate player. I don't know if this is the best sequence in the world for the computer players, if you will. So I think it's definitely worth a shot putting together the tickets in this pick five today.
We're going to go through it. I do want to hit a couple of highlights of these first 4 days. And, of course, we connected right at the start last week, the first couple of cards of the Indiana Grand season. And one thing that was really fun, I had Randy Klopp earlier that morning, and of course it was you and I talked the second day of the meet, and all he's done is continued on, much like Eric Hallstrom had suggested, given that, as Randy explained, he had wintered, with the racetrack open for training as a center. He basically stayed home, and it's obviously paid off. I mean, and most of his horses are running.
Yeah, I hope some of the other Indiana horsemen take notice about that. A lot of times they'll go and, if you're having success at other places, then by all means, you should, take a look at the winter. But if you're just kind of muddling along, and you might as well crank it up where the money is good, and you know what's going on, and Randy took advantage first year of year-round training at Indiana Grand and didn't have to go anywhere else. So, I mean, that made the decision for him a lot easier, and he is certainly... 8 wins in the first 4 days? So it's been something else for Mr. Klopp.
And there was, to me, when I handicapped today, because this is the first card that I looked at a couple of races for yesterday that ended up, being won by outsiders. Not that I didn't reach for an outsider, but one of the toughest decisions to me about this card, and in fact, my ticket structure reflects it today as well, Bill, these Indiana breds that are making seasonal debuts. And you look at the 8th and the 9th race today, you got a non-winners of 4 lifetime. So you're talking about accomplished horses that, have won 3 condition races, plus whatever claiming events and starters they've been in. This is a nice group of horses. And then the non-winners of 2 for the 3 and up fillies and mares, that's the nightcap. As I said, I'm going 6 deep in here. And there's a chance that even like a horse like that, Willa Dean on the rail at 30-1, I think is not without chance. I mean, a real chance. So you have to make a decision about, trainer, and you're strictly using things like trainer stats on, extended layoffs, because these are horses that for the most part haven't been seen since October or November.
Yep. And then they're all in the same boat. So
yeah.
It's not like one or two have an advantage in the races that you're talking about. Sometimes you do get that case where there's a recency factor that you have to also play into your handicapping when they're going up against some long layoff horses as well. So, it's a fun sequence. I think it's, like I said, I do think it's manageable, but, it's one of, it's easily our best betting card so far at the meet. I'm sure I'll say that a few more times as we go through the weeks and months, but, I try and call it the way I see it. I'm not the Harry Carey of track announcers and track representatives, but you know, I do like to put a rosy view on my racetrack as well.
I love it. Well, of course, yesterday, one thing before we dive into the fifth race and start the sequence, I mentioned it at the top of the show. There was only one, you know, somebody scooped that pool yesterday with the 10 horse in the nightcap, that big If True for Dr. Gorham. And I haven't seen anything this morning. I haven't looked since early hours, but I'd be just curious to see if, you know, where that might have come from. You know, what kind of a ticket took down, you know, the 40,000 plus yesterday.
Yeah, if you would have texted me, I could have found out for you.
Well, that's all right. We'll get it. We'll get that answer from the mutual department, and let's take a swing at this sequence. I want to see what you're doing, and we'll compare it. Starting in the fifth race, and this is a mile first level allowance. This is open company, and you do have, you know, you do have a serious favorite in here in Blue Ridge Mountain. But there's a couple of horses that demand at least a passing, you know, passing conversation.
Yeah, let's talk favorite first. Blue Ridge Mountain, Amos second in the starter allowance at Oaklawn. I think he did pretty well at Oaklawn. I was looking at the charts on March 27th. And a lot of horses were on or near the lead that went on to win. You know, there was like an exception or two. But the horse he lost to, Blue Ridge Mountain, Thomas Shelby, was a horse that was on the front end and was part of that pretty fast early pace and still held on. So that was quite a performance from Thomas Shelby, and Blue Ridge Mountain was a clear-cut second. So he's certainly the one to beat. Some people will single him. There's a couple of Indiana breds in this race. Well, actually, there's, three of them, but two of them that I could make a case for. The one I like is Bayou Cat. He just kept on winning races, and he defeated Mai Tai's Gem a couple of times, and that's a strong horse from the Tony Duran barn. In his last two wins, and he got really, really competitive and refused to lose. Whether or not off the long layoff, that remains to be seen. Phil Habita to have the same tenacity is taking on a little bit better in a horse like Blue Ridge Mountain. Cash Logistics on turf last couple times out, a winner here at Indiana Grand at the end of last season, and Cash Logistics always seemed to have a bit of quality about him. And then, you know, a little bit more of a long shot. You know, it was just the condition claiming race two starts ago, but not very gentle. Ran a pretty good race at Oaklawn off of a layoff. And then last time out in a starter allowance, that early pace was not that quick. And he's more of a deep closer. So he might need a pace set up. So I don't know. You know, you'd have to be pretty deep to use him. But I thought I'd mention him. For me, though, Blue Ridge Mountain and Bayou Cat are probably my top two in there. But I wouldn't argue with you if you like Cash Logistics or whatnot. But that's how I thought I saw, or that's how I saw race number five.
Interesting. The horse that didn't come up here that I actually picked second as a value interest and was not very gentle, the six. The shaking it up gelding, and you know, does have some form, and you know, is competitive. I picked it 1-6-5-7, so depending on budget, but certainly, you know, a narrow budget, Blue Ridge Mountain might be, you know, might be a place to tiptoe. There is a very heavy favorite we'll talk about in a little bit. Let's go to the second leg. Bill Downs with us, of course, and the sequence starts at 4:29 Eastern today, and racing at Indiana Grand kicks off at 2:25. The second leg is a second level allowance going three quarters.
Yeah, and you got two favorites in here. I made 1-6-5, the 4 Vivid Verse, and the 6 Keeping It Classy made him 8-5. Vivid Verse coming off a good series of races at Turfway on synthetic. He has won on the dirt in the past, and I think that's important, so I'm not going to downgrade him for that. And Vivid Verse, you know, can be, he doesn't like the lead, but he's more of a stalker, mid-pack type of horse.
And, Contreras, claimed this horse two starts back. This horse is very popular in the claim box with four claims from his last five races. Last race was the first time that he wasn't in for a claiming price, so he couldn't be claimed out of that race. And so Vivid Verse, I think, finds a very good spot in here. Keeping it classy, won a couple of open allowance races at Indiana Grand last year, one other than and a two other than. Then tried stakes competition, didn't go very well, and then ran a little bit of a clunker. But that was a pretty good race in October the 6th. The top three horses all came back to win next time out. Soul Street for, I think it's Amos. Mm-hmm. Kirk Herbstreit owns part of Soul Street. That was that race in October the 6th, and Soul Street's not a bad horse at all. So I think he's taking on easier as well in here. And then if you're looking to go deep, a couple of horses that have been a little off form, but if they ran their best race, they could be competitive. Sturgill, a few races at Oaklawn, not getting any success at long shot prices, but they're obviously taking on some much stronger fields, didn't get off to good starts either in both of those races. And Little Kansas, he might be getting up there a little bit, six-year-old. But he's run a big race on occasion. It wouldn't surprise me to, somehow, someday, that he runs a big race and upset a big price. But if you're skinny ticket, I don't know how I'm going to separate the four and the six. So for me, I might just be like, this might be the race I just kind of like, I hope and pray I get one of those two chalk home and then move on to a next leg. But I just wanted to bring up a couple of those long shots as well, just in case you might want to use them as well.
Well, and there's two others, and I completely agree about the scenario beyond Vivid Verse and Keeping It Classy. There's a handful of horses that have got isolated performances that absolutely can win this race. Doesn't mean they're going to. In fact, the seven on the outside, the Maria Pinzon Protonico colt, El Sobreviviente. You look at that race two back at Turfway, and he actually was a little better at Turfway than he's been on the dirt earlier in his career. That was over the winter. And you mentioned Sturgill. That race at Hawthorne in December absolutely can impact here. And Little Kansas actually is a pretty consistent sort. And Bobby Burnett puts on the blinkers. I'm going to mention two others, though, that I ended up picking this 4-1-6-7 with that El Sobreviviente. The one horse is interesting to me, Bill. Travis Short cuts back, drops down, and goes turf to dirt. And that's the triple whammy for me. I'm money, the one horse, Malcolm Franklin. I think this horse is dangerous in here on the turn back, okay, on the turf to dirt.
It's first time against older. I would mention that as well.
Sure.
But, the last time he ran on the dirt sprint, he ran a pretty good race with a decent early pace down at Sam Houston back on February 4th. So that would be the race I think that you'd be looking at when comparing on money to the rest of the field.
It's a fun race for that reason, but you're absolutely right. The 4 and 6 will get you through. I'm going to use 1, 4, 6, though. I'm going to go three deep in my A's in here. The third leg is where the day's heaviest favorite, and you got to admire the line making you did here, Bill, because some people won't do this and just say this horse is supposed to be 2-5 and you made him 2-5 established. It's crazy that this horse is still a maiden, frankly. This Constitution gelding for Twin Creeks and Mount Brilliant, this is a Mount Brilliant bred that Randy Goulart got involved in, and was a $400,000 Keeneland yearling back when. How many horses do you see that are maidens that have a 92 buyer on their record? It's crazy.
Yep, and at some point you want to get the maiden broken, and this looks as good a spot as any. His best race probably was going, he was a one-turn mile, but that's the same distance as today's race, but we're going around two turns. And, ran at Oaklawn at Fairgrounds as the beaten favorite. And, they got a get the confidence going so you don't become like one of those professional type maidens, because this horse is supposed to be a lot better than what he's done so far, especially in these last couple races. But I think this is a good spot. You know, Cox and Amos have got horses in here. Donzie the six for Brad Cox, a son of Distorted Humor, first time going a route of ground. Watch the race at Sam Houston. And, yeah, he did get blocked in the stretch, but, you know, he was never going to be – I don't think he was going to be ever a threat to win that race. So, but he did show some signs of life, passing multiple horses in the last furlong, albeit a distant fourth. And, the key angle, I think, is going from a sprint to a route for Donzie. 37 is a son of FNX out of an honor grades mare. So you would think that if this horse is going to show ability, would be going around two turns, winning a turf sprint in his debut for Amos. And a horse came over on him pretty good at the start. So, you know, it's tough for a first-time starter when there's such adversity at the start. So I'm willing to give him another shot in here. And Jermaine Bridgemahan is on for Mr. Amos. And those are probably the ones that, you know, I think that's a pretty good synopsis of the main contenders in race seven.
I agree. And if you're playing ABC tickets, which is what I laid out, 37 and Donzie are at the, you know, at the very least, they're two C's. However, there is something to talk about here, Bill, that's got to be addressed. There's four horses in here that are coming out of sprints, including established. So, for starters, you've got horses that have some natural sprint speed, and Eduardo Caramori has a first-time starter coming off of a 34-1 gate work. So, that horse is going to blast out of the gate. So, technically, you got five horses in this field of nine that are going to stretch out and are, you know, going to create an early pace scenario. So there is a little bit of a potential for this to perhaps collapse. And, even a horse like Rounder, Randy Klopp in that setting, who already ran last week, he'll be tighter and might pick up pieces. That's why this sequence is really interesting. I mean, yes, the 2-5 shot could win and run his A race and drown these, but there's also a potential for this thing to completely collapse if all five of the quick early types get involved.
Yeah, it's just how you see the race and who you see as potentially benefiting from a scenario like that. And that, you know, if you can find a long shot in this race, besides the top three I mentioned, that'll be a separator for sure from the rest of your fellow bettors.
Wanted to throw it out. Let's look at the late Thoroughbred double and a 5-furlong state bred non-winners of four. And, you know, these are horses that, you know, that have all won at least three non-winners of four lifetime. And, you know, horses that have done a variety of different things. You got some stake horses in here like Stop Hammer Time and, you know, horses that last year we talked about quite a bit. But this is the scenario, Bill, that I laid out earlier. In this race and in the ninth, you got all horses coming off winter layoffs.
Yep. And so let's talk about the favorite first, Bets Down, Let's Ride, who had his undefeated streak broken in career start number four in the Crown Ambassador, had the rail. It was a sloppy track that day. That was a pretty good race. Dillsboro Devil ran outstanding, and he got beat by a couple lengths. He's got speed, and he's only a 5-furlong race. So, you know, it's hard to have a huge knock against Bets Down, Let's Ride. Cielo Azul has won his last three dirt races, two sprints and a route, as he's climbed the class ladder and defeated his stablemate, Cap de Fuego, in that race back on November the 4th. He defeated Proud and Famous three starts ago. Proud and Famous is not too bad. He's on the card today before the pick five. Stop Hammer Time, as you mentioned. you know, he ran a lot of productive races. You know, he rattled off two in a row, then he ran in stakes competition, wasn't good enough, then went off as a beaten favorite, lost to Bandito de Amores, who's in this race as well, but it was a fast closing third, and a couple of routes off the board, including a stakes race. So now he's freshened up, and you know, Tiana's got a lot of workouts into this gelding. It wouldn't surprise me if he runs well. I just don't know how he's going to, you know, trip-wise, being along the rail, doesn't have as much early speed as Bets Down Let's Ride. You know, by the time you go a furlong and a half, you're hitting that turn. So it's tough. I tend to lean towards the horses with tactical speed in these five furlong races. So Bets Down Let's Ride is probably my top choice in here. And I mentioned the two others that I like. I think Here Comes Trey and SS Trooper are both better on the turf. I wouldn't be looking for them in this spot. I think they're looking for races down the road. I mean, Bandito de Amores is a nice horse, but he didn't win a race in 2020. So that's pretty much a view of what I see in that eighth race.
No major argument. I've got Stop Hammer Time and Bets Down Let's Ride as the A's, and Cielo Azul and Bandito de Amores as B's. Actually, I the layoff lines are the question, and having to, you know, just having to deal with, you know, you a lot of these horses, in fact, you know, particularly the four-year-olds and the things like five-year-olds like Stop Hammer Time, you can look back to last spring or summer and see how they came back off their winter break a year ago as a point of reference. So you have a little bit of that to go on. If you're live into the nightcap, hopefully you've saved some bankroll for some, you know, some wide multiples, because I thought this was a crazily competitive group.
Okay, well, let's talk about a few of them. Emily Lane's the 8-5 favorite, right? Ended last year, second beating the nose. She has won fresh in the past, not as long of a layoff as this, but that win on June 22nd was off a bit of a layoff, but that was just a maiden win. Lots of Nutcracker Ballet, who was on the card earlier. Nutcracker Ballet is a much better router than a sprinter, and Emily Lane made the early move and tried to steal it, but got run down by Nutcracker Ballet. But that was a pretty good race by Emily Lane, and I think she is a deserving favorite in here. Diamond Solitaire, three-year-old filly, taking on some older fillies and mares for the first time. She showed a lot of potential when she won her maiden race by 10 lengths. Then she was in some big money stakes races, Indiana Bred races, a fourth, a second, and a fourth. But the Miss Indiana Stakes on November the 17th, that was, I thought, a pretty good race. And she was dead last early on and rallied nicely for fourth. So I think she's going to be a factor in the three-year-old filly division here at Indiana Grand this year. And Bumble of Love last time out finished second, and that was about as slow early pace as you can have. And she, you know, she likes to come from the clouds, if you will, so she needs some sort of early pace. But, you know, last time out, she got up for second, and I thought that was a pretty darn good performance when you take a look at the early pace. Some, you know, coming from that far out against a soft early pace is very, very difficult. So Bumble of Love, I think, is a filly, lightly raced four-year-old filly, still with some upside in that race. So those are the three I like. I know, Steve, you were mentioning others, so I'm interested to see what you thought.
Well, I tell you, I put Very Amelia on top.
Oh, look at you.
The Antonio Duran, here's a horse that ran a decent debut race in November, came back right at the end of the meet, and won as a favorite, came through as a favorite. So she's got a lightly raced aspect to her, I don't want to use, you know, frog with least warts. That doesn't apply here. She's the one with the most upside, as opposed to the ones that have run multiple times, in allowance tries and so forth, and haven't gone beyond the one win. So I like that aspect. And it's also the reason that I was quite pleased that Tony Granitz scratched Tapernia, because she scared me for that reason. I totally agree about Diamond Solitaire. Obviously, we're using Emily Lane. She's the filly to beat. So those are my three A's, 4, 6, 9. Bumble of Love, You Bet, has got to be on the ticket. And I think the Lauer's got to be respected in here, too. I mean, don't you remember the misremembered filly? Here's a four-year-old. Misremembereds, as they mature from 3 to 4, they've got the potential to make a fairly significant, just using figures, it makes a significant forward move. So if there's any development at all from Don't You Remember, she's a danger in here. And I mentioned at the top of the visit, I alluded to Willadine for Bob Dobbs. Willadine is not impossible in here. The Sangaree filly, and she's 30-1. She's not far off this group. And I don't know. She's got 5 works under her belt coming in here. She's going to save all the ground. She's done a couple of different things stylistically in her good races. She ended her 3-year-old season on a nice, consistent run, against, albeit a variety of claimers and allowance types. In fact, she ran in a 37 non-2. Same condition for a little, about the same money. She was 4th, beaten 9, but she wasn't disgraced. I don't think she's impossible. So I've got the 1, 3, and 10 as Bs.
All right. Just a different way of looking at it. So, for me, I do think the favorites are
formidable.
Are gonna be tough, but hey, I've been wrong plenty of times. It's just the way how you look at it. And, it's almost kind of like how you're looking at the sequence as a whole sometimes can affect, how you might perceive the final race in a segment. We'll see how it all plays out.
Bill Downs, everybody. Bill Downs won on your Twitter machine, and looking forward to today's action. I'll make the final adjustments. Actually, I don't think I have to adjust my plays much at all, but I'll get it over on the website. And Bill, I think there's about an 80% chance that as soon as I pack up and wrap up here, I'm going to head up there to Shelbyville. So I might I might see you there later today.
Oh, awesome. Sounds good.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Bill Downs, everybody. He's got to get ready for the broadcast, and we got to bring in Seth Merrow. And Seth is probably, if I know Seth, he's probably playing some Keeneland today. Most importantly, probably, he's getting probably a little misty over the departure this coming up next week of Richard Grunder. And Seth, how are you going to tune in to Tampa and know that it's Tampa anymore?
An absolutely good question. Richard Grunder to me means short sleeves and shorts and hanging out at Tampa. And I said it earlier in the season we were talking. I have not been down to Tampa, and it's been too long. I got to get back to Tampa. But when I get back, it won't be the same. It definitely will not be the same.
Well, we'll
wish him the best. I guess he's still hanging out, going to be doing the jockey agent thing, I guess, at Canterbury in the summer. So
nice.
He'll still be in the game.
Yeah, I know. Nobody leaves the game.
Speaking of track announcers, we have the new, I don't know whether I've mentioned it on your show before. We've had the new Daily Report podcast at Capital OTB. And every podcast I start out with a trivia question. And today's trivia question, I mean, you've been around the game as long as I have, and so you remember the days. I said, when did Keeneland first add a track announcer? And I started the question off saying, if you're new to the game, you might not remember it, but it was a different experience watching the simulcast signal from Keeneland before they had the track announcer. There, silence, as it was. And it's a different kind of experience.
Did you get answers? Did you get a prize winner?
I toss it out at the beginning and then give the answer at the end. So,
well, don't leave everybody hanging. It's a shorter time than people realize.
It, it absolutely is. The first year that Keeneland added a track announcer, and it was Kurt Becker. He's been their only announcer. He's had a couple of little brief periods off when he had the, you know, the flu or whatever. But 1997, track announcer first showed up at Keeneland.
And I know I made a reference to this the other day, and it probably was a little obscure. I did see where someone on the internet was expressing consternation that Kurt Becker chooses not to try to call photos. And part of Kurt's approach involves and he's got that, you know, that low key, you know, that low key announcer style, kind of a dulcet tone. Part of his approach answers that question. Keeneland doesn't want an intrusion from the crow's nest. And in fact, it's only in the last, I don't know, three seasons, maybe three, 4 years, that Kurt has even opened it up to be a little bit more demonstrative. So for the people on the internet that are aghast that Kurt Becker doesn't shove himself, into your oral sensibility, that's why, because it's Keeneland's preference.
Yeah, people get totally 180 degrees from me. They get crazy about track announcers and what they do. If somebody's out there and they're calling it and they're getting the horses in the right spots and whatnot, I'm good with it. Particularly these days with the chicklets, I can look up and follow the chicklets and I'm good to begin with. But calling the photos, you're just setting yourself up for a bad situation if you start doing that. Particularly, boy, I don't know if you've been watching the last week. I assume, yeah, they have had a couple of more than that. They have had probably eight
that's right.
races over the last week that were just bang bang at the wire. Where I'm sitting in doing the afternoon show and I call it live in my head, and then I look at the replay and I call it another way, and I look at the third replay and okay. They've had, as I say, probably in the last week, 7 or 8 of those types of races. And so, yeah, I don't blame any track announcer who doesn't want to get into that. Wait for the photo.
Well, in fact, I mentioned the news yesterday, and I'll repeat if anybody missed it. Speaking of track announcers, Bobby Newman, so long associated with Calder Racecourse, he'll be calling Prairie Meadows. And they got that gig. And, of course, I'm sure, you know, it maybe this is, a little inside baseball, but the reality is it's a pretty cutthroat group, the track announcer community. It'll be a game of the Game of Thrones twister trying to get that job at Tampa.
Oh, it's definitely, there is a limited number of spots and a certain group of people out there. The Tampa gig, these days it's pretty good. I mean, you have a decent little season to go down and call, and it's going to be interesting to see which direction they do go and who they do choose. But as I think you're exactly right. It will be a battle to get down there.
A couple of quick notes, Seth. Obviously, next week I'll make sure to carve out a better. Today ended up being a blur, starting with Matt Hegarty reporting on 17 hard news stories. One story that I think you'll be interested. I'm curious, although you like the you don't. You like the small denomination pick six, but the dollar, looking forward to tomorrow in New York and the resumption of kind of a traditional pick six style.
Yeah, I had Pat McKenna on with me this weekend to talk mainly about fans coming back to New York racing, but we touched on some of the other news stories, and that was obviously one of them. And I said to Pat, just what you said, I kind of like the jackpot bet, although I'm not a big pick six bettor, but down at Gulfstream, I've hit a couple of consolations. You know, with a $60 ticket that paid $1,200 and play on the mandatory days. And so I've kind of gotten to like it, although, again, I don't play it that often that I really have a dog in the fight. But I said to Pat, and I think it's the truth, I think there's a group of people out there who miss the traditional pick six.
Yes.
And I think New York is going to be kind of the only game in town now for those people. So I think they found themselves a nice little niche.
Well, Del Mar went back to a, you know, format, a pick six format. But this will, you know, New York was really a major market, you know, second only to California for years when it came to pick six pools. So totally agree. And I'm looking forward to those carryovers. We enjoy doing that so much. How about a play or two for this afternoon? Anything?
Well, I looked at Keeneland, but they're off the turf. So I don't know whether I have anything super clever. I was kind of looking through it before we went on, but the races that I liked were some of the turf races. I suppose the sixth race today, maiden 30 claimers. I have a 3, 6, 7, and 2. The Brad Cox, I don't know if we'll get the 3-1, but that horse is maybe a little bit interesting. I'm intrigued off the debut. Going to have to step it up a little bit in the second start. But coming in from Turfway, I think that's possible. Good Juju and Excursion are also playable. And again, if it holds up to be an 8-horse field, maybe box those up. I think they have a little edge in that group. The 7th is off. The 8th. The Wesley Ward first are in the 8th race. Find the Spectre by Tapiture could be a little bit interesting. I mean, what a crazy meet Wesley Ward had. You usually think of those 2-year-olds with Wesley Ward week or so. Yeah, he was doing that, but then he got right back on the beam. And he had an incredible meet, as has Luis Saez on the jockey side of things.
Very much. Seth Merrow, everybody. We'll talk Derby with Seth next week, and He's all over the internet and podcast and Capital OTB this and Equidaily that, and he's a going concern, and he's the face of GoTB. I want to thank Seth. Bill Downs heading to Indiana Grand. I'll have Gus's Keeneland action up and my Indiana thoughts. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillandale. Sid Fernando, Darren Rogers, of course, with the Derby invocation. We have to wait 2 years for one. And, of course, Matt Hegarty that started everything out. He's at Keeneland today. Say hello to Matt. Buy him a drink. You have to pay for all those drinks in Vegas. Talk to you tomorrow from Churchill Downs, Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.